Let me start by saying this. Listen up. If you are sitting here and thinking, I don't remember any of my dreams ever, this sermon isn't going to do anything for me, I want you to know that I'm going to get to you. I will, I promise. And a lot of what I'm going to say before I get to that part of the sermon is going to apply to you, so pay attention. And I'll teach you how to engage this conversation, even if you never remember any of your dreams. So don't fall asleep, and don't start on your to-do list. Listen up, and we'll get to you, I promise. It all makes sense. The truth is, we all dream. Even if we don't remember the details of our dreams, we all dream. Brain scans and other studies have proven that all animals that experience REM, rapid eye movement, sleep, dream. And almost all mammals have REM sleep. Dogs and elephants and mice and koalas and us and everybody else. We all dream. Jeremy Taylor makes the point that REM sleep is dangerous. We're basically paralyzed while we're in that kind of sleep and vulnerable to predators, and yet evolution has not evolved us out of dreaming. And this indicates that dreaming is in some way essential to our survival. His theory is that dreaming allows us to process our lives and move toward transformation, that it turns short-term memory into long-term memory, and that it sparks creativity and change, the workshop of evolution, individually, collectively. So when we say here in the month of September that dreaming is one of the ways that we transform our world from inhumanity to love, we do not just mean figurative dreaming, as we discussed last week, our plans and hopes and desires for a better world. We mean actual dreaming, too, the dreams of our sleeping hours. So let me share some dreams with you, some mine, some other people's, and all these dreams happened in the last few days. A friend of mine, another Unitarian Universalist minister, I told her I was talking about dreams, and she told me that she had a dream, the details of which she didn't remember. But she woke up in the middle of the night feeling like she had taken on more than she could handle, was the feeling that she had, more than she could do, she feeling from the dream overwhelmed. You ever wake up from a dream feeling this? We don't know the content of her dream. Maybe she was running from place to place or carrying a lot of objects and they were falling out of her hands. But through some symbolic imagery, which she understood, she had this feeling, this is too much. I can't do it. My friend, about 2 weeks ago, she returned to her church after a four-month sabbatical. It's a busy, mid-sized church, a little bigger and a little busier than this one. And she went from the stillness and reflection of sabbatical to the start of the church year, early September, in one day. 0 to 60, 10 seconds. No wonder she dreamt as she did. So the question becomes, and the question I asked her, what are you going to do with that feeling? Are you going to delegate more? Are you going to let something off, something go? Or are you going to keep trying to keep every plate in the air all the time? I am sure that if she doesn't do something different, she's going to keep having dreams like this. They might become nightmares, even, which Jeremy Taylor says are just ways that our brain uses to get us to pay attention. That's why nightmares are so vivid and they wake us up so that we will remember them. I've had dreams like that, like my friend did, and I bet a lot of you have too. The other night I woke and I remembered a dream, which I only do every few weeks, but I remembered this one. It was a variation on a dream I've had more times than I could count. What I call the lateness dream, or the miss the meeting dream. It's a nightmare, really. The setup isn't important, it varies every time, but the point is that in this particular dream, I had a speaking engagement. It was not worship this time, some other thing I was supposed to speak at, and the dream wasn't clear what it was. It's often worship in this dream. But I was running very late. I had 5 minutes to get from my house near the river to Poplar Grove. I've never had a speaking engagement in Poplar Grove. I don't think I've ever gotten out of the car in Poplar Grove, just driven through. I don't know why that town appeared in the dream, but there it was. And of course, I was never going to make it. It's way too far. And I woke up. When I was a teenager, I had this same dream. I had it about missing a test. I was late and there was a test. I was going to fail. I've had it about missing class. I've had it about missing worship many times and all kinds of things like that. When you have a reoccurring dream like this or a reoccurring nightmare, there's something important going on. You can probably guess what this dream means for me, although it's not just a fear of being late. It's a fear of missing life, of not being where I need to be in order to live and thrive and become myself. I worry about missing out, about disappointing others and myself. Or maybe it's my brain telling me, there is somewhere you need to be. One of the things that Taylor says is that dreams are like myths. Mythical stories have rich symbols. They're full of things that mean something. Golden fleeces, red apples, half creatures, magical objects of some kind, symbolic objects, colors, words, deeds. Dreams have all this stuff too, these archetypal images, magic and symbols. And dreams, like myths in this way, are overdetermined, which is to say they have more than one meaning. They mean many things. They don't have just one meaning. Taylor walks through four or five different meanings of each dream that he analyzes. He tells the story of a woman in one of his dream groups who dreamed that she was carrying rotten meat in her purse and attending a party in the basement of her own home, but no one at the party seemed to know that she was there. It's like she was invisible in her own home. There's a social meaning to this dream, a feeling of loneliness. She was a new empty nester. Her children had just finally moved out. There was that subterranean archetypal meaning, the needing to go under the earth in order to be reborn. And there was a medical meaning, the rotten meat. And it turned out in this case that the woman had cancer. At the urging of her dream group, she went to the doctor and she insisted on tests. And the doctor said, you're fine, you don't need anything. She said, no, I test for everything. I don't know what it is, but something's going on. And the cancer was caught and treated successfully. Her body, which includes her mind, was shouting at her that something was wrong. Thankfully, she heard the message. Multiple meanings, real life meanings. Dreams aren't just silly flights of fancy. Our mind is working hard to figure things out and process signals which our conscious mind maybe can't understand, but somehow we know to communicate those meanings to our conscious selves. The brain is amazing, and we only understand it a little. And so it would be presumptuous of us to dismiss this out of hand. There's nothing supernatural here. At least not necessarily. It's fully scientific. Neurons connecting, firing, memories being processed, signals being carried. But if you want to attribute a spiritual meaning, of course, you may. If you wish to say the spirit of life spoke to me through my dreams, through my vision, then you may say that, and you may believe that and act on that. Warned in a dream to go by another route, the wise men departed for the east and did not return to Herod. Warned in a dream. It's not me, says Joseph to Pharaoh, it's not me, it's God who interprets the dreams through me. If you believe, as I do, that the mysterious holy is incarnated into each person and all existence, including yourself, then it's no great stretch to admit that the mysterious holy communicates through our dreams. You can believe that. But what you may not do, what you may not do and what others may not do is to say, it came to me in a dream and therefore it is true of everyone. What we must not permit is someone to say, I had a vision, and therefore it's true for everyone else. Your dream is yours alone. Only you can understand what it means, and the meaning is yours alone. Your dream speaks to your life, not to anybody else's. When I hear your dream, if you tell it to me, I might say, ah, if I had that dream, for me, it would mean such and such. But that's not my dream, that's your dream. And my thoughts might spark your thinking, but it's your dream. Your dream, your hopes, your meaning, your fears belong to you. Your life is the only life over which you have authority. Dreams are powerful. Dreams are powerful. Visions are powerful, but they are for you. A religious leader or an activist or a mystic with a powerful dream will often gather others around them, and people will make that person's dream their dream. We've all seen that happen. But this is dangerous. Perhaps you share some symbols or elements or archetypes. Dreams might be similar, but each person's dream is their own. Doesn't belong to anyone else. Taylor says, too, that dreams always come in the service of wholeness and growth. Always come in the service of wholeness and growth. Dreams are ours alone, and they come to help us grow and mature and become ourselves. They show us what in our heart we know we should do next. They reveal our fears so we can face and surmount them head on. They bring the disparate parts of our lives together and make connections our conscious minds aren't able to grasp in a logical way yet. We haven't figured it out, but our dreams are telling us. Dreams also put before us those ideas and hopes and taboos that our minds have tried to shunt aside, yet are part of the fully human life. Dreams are often full of taboos. Dreams of domination or submission, fantasies that we're not supposed to have, and yet everyone does. Dreams of irresponsibility and escape. Dreams of death of ourselves or others. Dreams of mysteries and bizarre occurrences. All these taboos that show up in our dreams. What are we to make of these kinds of dreams? If we take them as literal desires, they can be frightening, terrifying even. We dream of someone dying, but we don't want them to die, so we put it out of our mind. We deny that we ever had such a dream. We dream of an illicit encounter, but we know that would be disaster, and so we deny it, try to forget that we had it. But dreams are not literal. They're mythic and figurative, symbolic. The death dream, for example, might be telling you that something has broken in the relationship with the person that you dreamed had died, and that needs attention. Something's going on there to pay attention to. That illicit encounter dream might be telling you to deepen that friendship, not to have an illicit encounter, but to reach out to that person as a friend. Something going on. Dreams are important, but you can't take them literally. The brain finds imagery and symbolic imagery powerful enough for the sleeping conscious mind to remember. Exaggeration for effect. Dreams are exaggerations, but exaggerations of important truths to get us to pay attention. One more dream story, another one of mine from a few nights ago. I was flying in an airplane in this dream, and in the airplane there were open windows. All the windows were open. It was not a problem in the dream. It was the way it was supposed to be. It was lovely, the air flowing through the cabin. It was great. Nobody was scared about that. And we're all flying along, and then the smell changed. I could actually smell it in the dream, from fresh water to salt water. It was so strong and beautiful, and we were over the ocean. It was sparkling blue, and the plane dipped down to go in for the landing, but as we got close, the plane tipped, banked sharply, and the left wing was just feet above the water, and I feared, Lord, we're going in. We're going in. This is not good. But then before me, through the open windows, we all saw the landing strip on the beautiful island palm trees and sandy beaches, and the plane straightened out and landed, and I woke up. Now, you can ponder, if you had a dream like that, what would it mean for you? And that would be your meaning. I figured out one of its probably many meanings pretty easily, that I needed a change of environment, metaphorically from fresh to salt water. Yet I feared going in, diving into the water, crashing in. A vacation was fine, but I didn't want to be a permanent resident of the bottom of the sea. But in the end, the pilot knew what he or she was doing, and we were fine. We landed, we were fine. It was going to be okay. As it happens, I had a short trip to see some friends in Milwaukee planned for the very next day. And running along Lake Michigan on the Milwaukee waterfront Saturday morning, I thought, well, there are no palm trees. There's no sandy beach, but the sun does sparkle on the water. And it was beautiful. And it was the change of environment, the little short getaway that my dream was suggesting. I already had it planned when my mind was telling me, you need to get away. It was great. Milwaukee's wonderful. I had a nice time. Though, if anyone wants to comp me some tickets for a Caribbean island, you just let me know. I'm sure to put them to use. I've interpreted this dream for you not, I hope, to overshare about myself, but to show you how you can understand your own dreams. The imagery is figurative, suggestive. You have to play with it to kind of figure out what it might be telling you, and it might be telling you more than one thing. The dream might approach both hopes and fears. And are not our hopes and fears often one and the same, tied up together into one bundle? Now, I said that I would say something to those of you who don't remember your dreams at all. So here goes. First, I bet that if you think before you go to sleep, I will remember one image from one dream when I wake up, that will work. Maybe it'll just be a color or one sound from your dream. Try to remember one thing. Think that before you go to sleep. It'll probably work. Write it down. Keep writing things down, and you'll remember more and more. It works every time. The other thing that you can do is this. When your mind wanders, when you're waking, but your mind begins to wander, and an image or a story or a feeling comes to you unbidden, surprising your waking mind, like, where did that come from? Treat that moment as dream material. It's the same part of your brain that's speaking to your conscious mind. What does the image suggest? What is this part of your mind trying to tell you, trying to get you to pay attention to? Play with it, follow it, see where it goes. It is the central proposition of Unitarian Universalism that human beings are naturally good. Not perfect, but that we're good. And that the more whole and integrated we are as people, the better our life and the world will be. We don't cut off part of ourselves and shunt it aside as if that's the bad part. We try to be whole and integrated and bring it all together because we are naturally good. The more whole, the more good. When we cut off part of ourselves, when we do that, the consequences are usually not good. It causes problems. We talk about being on a journey toward wholeness. This is what this means, to integrate ourselves individually and as a society, to not cut off parts. And dreams are a central way to identify when we are not moving toward wholeness and how we might change that, because it speaks to the part of us that's being left out. It shouts, hey, don't forget about this. Which Xian was the real Xian? The one who went with Chao and raised a family, or the one who stayed home asleep? Either way, a part of her was cut off. Her love for Chao or her devotion to her family, her home. Either way, part of her was cut off. So which was the real Xian, the whole Xian? It's the one that's brought together. The one that's brought together. The real me, the whole me, is on time for the meeting and gets away every once in a while, but without crashing into the ocean. Both. Who's the real you? The whole you. What are your dreams, your images, your unbidden thoughts telling you? What are they telling you is missing from your whole life? What are they suggesting you try or do or become or explore? Spend time with these dreams. Listen, explore, discuss, see where they take you. Stay open to possibility. And remember, most of all, the good news of our dreams. Our minds, known and unknown, wish for us to be whole and thriving. The spirit of life wishes for us to be whole and thriving. Our bodies wish for us to be whole and thriving. Dreams are an invitation, a reminder, a wake-up call on our journey to wholeness, our journey to becoming our best and full self, and that a full and thriving whole self, to follow the spirit where it leads. This is who we're meant to become. So sleep, perchance to dream, and become yourself. Follow your free spirit where it leads. Embrace the journey and wake to the new, growing, living you. Let's sing together. Where my free spirit onward leads. The early service had a little trouble, but the choir is here. You're going to do great. Don't hesitate. Just sing out loud and rise in body or spirit.